Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains sensitive material, audio descriptions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died, graphic discussion of deaths in custody, and also the name of a First Nations warrior who has passed. This special Doin' Time program is a dedication and tribute to the much-loved and honourable Uncle Ray Jackson, born the 27th of March 1941 and passed away on April the 23rd, 2015. And I know it's a couple of days before the anniversary, but I felt that it was fitting and respectful to do the show a couple of days before rather than after. Ray was a Wiradjuri warrior who dedicated his life to fighting for justice and human rights for Aboriginal people and much more. A former trade unionist, Ray became the founding secretary of the Aboriginal Deaths in Custody Watch Committee in 1987. Right until the day he died, Ray Jackson was fighting to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody, and this lifelong work is being recognised, for instance, by Macquarie University in the lead-up to the 25th anniversary of the Royal Commission into Deaths in Custody report. So we've got a couple of tributes coming up on the show today, and I wanted to just let you know that they will speak to the work that Ray has done, but also his loved ones, and they're all loved ones, will speak about him personally throughout the show. Our first tribute to Ray is Joseph Bugliese, longtime activist and much loved guest on Doin' Time and close friend and collaborator of Uncle Ray Jackson. And after that, we're going to be having a yarn with Madika Penrith, who is the granddaughter of Ray Jackson. Caroline usually comes on every year, but she was unable to come on today as she is experiencing some very, very heavy personal commitments. But she has organised Madika to come on, and so we send much love to Carolyn as well. So we will now cross over to Joseph. Hello, Joseph. Welcome.
Hi, Marissa. Welcome. Thank you for your warm welcome, and wonderful to be here to speak about the great Uncle Ray Jackson.
It's that time of year again, isn't it, Joseph?
It is. I can never forget the day I got the news, just like yesterday.
Tell me about that.
Well, look, actually, my mother had just recently passed away 2 days prior, and I got a call saying that Uncle Ray had passed, and I just felt such an enormous sense of double loss, really, because he'd been such a mentor, such a friend, and, of course, as you said, an indefatigable warrior who for social justice across so many fronts. So today, when I received that news, it was deeply marked in my psyche, an enormous, irrevocable sense of loss.
I still feel that sense of loss today, to be honest.
I can well understand that. And I can understand anyone who knew Uncle Ray or worked with him or looked from a distance at the extraordinary achievements would feel his loss more than ever in a global climate fraught with war, racist hate, the acceleration of imprisonment of people of colour and black people, Indigenous people. So more than ever, we need the guidance and the strong leadership of someone like Uncle Ray.
Yeah, it's let's talk about the work that he did with Deaths in Custody. And I believe that Ray became the founding secretary of the Aboriginal Deaths in Custody Watch Committee in 1987. And then when that funding disbanded that committee, he founded ISTJA Sydney and was a president for quite a long time, wasn't he, up until the day he died?
Absolutely. Because of his years of tireless work with Indigenous inmates in the Settler State Prison Industrial Complex, he had in-depth knowledge of what was required to assist both the inmates and the families, but he also dealt with the families who had lost loved ones due to racist police violence. And so he was really well positioned to become the one of the key formative people in establishing the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody in the first instance, which, as you know, was announced on the 10th of August 1987 by Prime Minister Bob Hawke. And as we know, it did issue 339 recommendations on how to stop those accelerating Indigenous deaths in custody. But as we also know in the current circumstance, hardly any of those recommendations have been implemented, and Indigenous deaths in custody continue to accelerate. And Uncle Ray would actually call what was happening in the prison industrial complex of the settler state a form of ongoing genocide of Indigenous people, because he would say at the fora, at the public meetings that he would hold, that what the state is doing in this accelerating imprisonment of Indigenous people and also in their killing by police and prison guards is continuing the breaking up of family, the rupturing of cultural transmission and the expropriation of Indigenous land. So he saw it as part of a whole constellation of settler powers that were continuing to disadvantage and, in a sense, annihilate, as he called it, by terming it genocide, Indigenous people from their own lands. So he had a very clear political vision as to how the prison industrial complex of the settler state was working. And as you mentioned, he was also formative in establishing the Aboriginal Deaths in Custody Watch Committee in 1987. However, he became really disillusioned with the way it lost its objectives and really wasn't fulfilling the aims of that watch committee in implementing a whole series of structural institutional changes to stop the deaths in custody, to stop the increasing incarceration of Indigenous people. And that's when he formed, with Don Clark, another wonderful Indigenous leader, the Indigenous Social Justice Association, and became president. Don Clark became the treasurer. And what can I say? It's one of the most important organisations ever formed in this country, because the work it did was phenomenal, all led by Uncle Ray. And I can talk more about that if you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, look, what Uncle Ray did was, this is what was extraordinary about his work. He had no state, no local, no federal government funding. It was completely volunteer run. And he conducted all of the operations of ISJA from a one-bedroom unit in his in an apartment block in Waterloo. And if you walked into that unit, it really was like walking into an archive. Every wall was filled with file cases of Indigenous deaths in custody that he was pursuing on behalf of the families. And basically, he had his fingers on every single case. And he had an extraordinary memory, a phenomenal memory, where he could bring up all the case details as though he were a trained professional lawyer. And you know, Uncle Ray, unfortunately, never had the opportunity to train in law, but I can tell you he was an incredible forensic mind and a legal arguer who would trump most lawyers in my eyes. And so he would often be the representative of choice of families who had lost loved ones to police or state violence. He would represent them and he would speak on behalf of them in terms of what their wishes were in gaining justice for their loved ones. And He would do this in the criminal justice settings. He would do it at public fora. He would do it in the media. And he was a really prolific letter writer who never stopped writing to our key politicians demanding justice for people who had lost loved ones in custody. And also, more importantly, because Uncle Ray had a very all-encompassing vision of justice for Indigenous people, he would argue for autonomy, self-determination, and what he called Indigenous sovereignty. And he saw all of that as a package, basically, and he would argue that there would be no stopping Indigenous deaths in custody unless Indigenous people had sovereignty and autonomy and self-determination over their own affairs.
Exactly. So he was a voice for the families, wasn't he?
And
in fact, isn't it true, Joseph, that I believe that Eddie Murray, whose 1981 death in police custody at Wee Waa Police Station was a key motivator for a Royal Commission?
He was, yes. And John Pat too.
And John Pat. And then, of course, years...
The evidence came out, John Pat had
supposedly
hung himself, but the evidence was saying that there were all sorts of really compromising situations that he had been killed by the police in the police station, and that's what really caused an uproar that pushed Indigenous people to call for the Royal Commissions.
That's right. And in fact, then we had T.J. Hickey as well.
Yeah.
In 2004.
Uncle Ray, as you know, had a particular place in his heart for TJ. He worked with TJ's mother in trying to get justice for TJ. And for people who are not familiar with TJ's story, TJ was a 17-year-old Aboriginal youth who died in a police pursuit around Redfern. He was riding a bike. There were no suspicious circumstances, but as we know, at the time, Redfern was hyper-surveilled by the police, and they would often collar youths and throw them into custody, racialised double standards and abuse of police discretionary powers, which were racist discretionary powers because they would let off white kids for similar offences if they had committed any, whereas they'd immediately convict and charge young Aboriginal kids. And so Aboriginal kids around the block were terrified. And one day TJ was caught in pursuit by the police, and to the horror of us all, his bike at one point jumped the curb and he landed on a fence and was impaled. A horrific death that's left a psychic wound in the family and in the larger community. And Uncle Ray comforted not only TJ's mother, but fought year in, year out, holding memorial marches, which were looked askance upon by the police, and they often tried to stop it, calling for a Royal Commission and justice for TJ.
Indeed, and just before Ray passed, I think it might have been a couple of weeks before, the police gave Ray a hard time because they didn't want him to march in a certain way for the TJ Hickey Memorial March, and took him to court and everything.
That's right, and he won, though. I mean, what was amazing about Uncle Ray was that he never backed off.
That's right.
And the police were often quite intimidated by him, because the other thing we've got to say about Uncle Ray was that he was such an eloquent speaker, and he could really put people in their place, not with, by being aggressive, but by being really persuasive and firm and authoritative, because he absolutely knew what he was talking about. And time and again, he would score a victory. And to give you another example of that, of his incredible legal prowess, his incredible legal intelligence and argumentative powers, because of the accelerating deaths in custody, immediately there was a death in custody, the body would be taken to the coroner, and a forensic pathologist, say, would, by law, have to conduct an autopsy report. Now, for a lot of Aboriginal families who had lost Indigenous loved ones via deaths in custody, they were often really upset and traumatised at the prospect of their loved one's body being treated disrespectfully, because they'd already been victims of assault and trauma and violence at the hand of state authorities like the police or prison guards. So what Uncle Ray decided to do was to argue that at each coronial autopsy, a representative of the family should be there to make sure that the body of the deceased was treated with respect. And basically, he put this to the New South Wales government. And a lot of figures who were watching him make these moves were saying, oh, look, you're never going to change the law. You're a dreamer. Forget it. And in fact, he put such a cogent case that he got the law changed and he got the right for Indigenous families to have a representative. And often, let me say, this was so traumatic for Indigenous families, it was actually Uncle Ray who stood in for them and made sure that the body of their loved one was treated with the utmost respect during the process of the forensic autopsy.
I was so hoping that you would talk about this, Joseph, because the attention really does need to be drawn to that. Like, I remember, look, the Doing Time show has had a long-standing tradition of interviewing Ray at least once a week, and I'm sure he's done heaps of other media as well. We're not the only ones, but I felt like he was a very special guest on it. Well, not, he wasn't even a guest. He was part of the show, you know, yeah. And I'd call him up and I'd say, oh, Ray, you know, can we talk about this particular death in custody? Yeah, let me just get the autopsy report, you know.
Yeah,
and
he had everything at his fingertips in that little.
Yeah. It's so awesome. I mean, I actually sometimes even want to pick up the phone and call him and I think, oh, my God, he's not here anymore. But, you know, every year since he's passed, this show has always made room for a tribute. I had the honour of meeting Ray when I was doing some work with the ISJA, Indigenous Social Justice Association, Melbourne, and we had gone to Sydney to cover the trial of the persecuted Hickey family. And yeah. and I met him that day, and since that day we've just had such a wonderful connection.
That's so lovely to hear. Look, I think that speaks to the warmth, the generosity and the humanity of the man. I mean, you know, like, it's so rare to find a social justice warrior that's got a gentleness of heart and spirit and a genuine care for the charges that he took on, you know, during his long career as president of ISJA. And I'll give you an example. For me, one of the most unforgettable moments,
yep,
which evidences his deep humanity, was when he would hold these public hearings where the family of someone who'd, you know, been killed in police custody would be given the public platform because the state and the media would not do that for them. They would listen to government officials or prison guards and police, but they would rarely ever give Indigenous people who had lost their loved one the right of reply, the right of return. And he would organise his public speaking fora at the settlement, for example, in Redfern, and invite the families to take the platform and to speak back to the violence of the state. And often the families would rant and rage and vent their sense of outrage at the loss of their loved one, or often they would just sit there quietly crying and he would give them the space just to be seen and to be heard in their grief. So there was a sensitivity to him about giving a public platform to the very people that the state denied that platform for.
Exactly. And, you know, Anzac Day is coming up soon. And, you know, we know, of course, Joseph, that Ray started off as a child stolen from his Wiradjuri mother.
Yes.
And what happened then? I think that his non-Aboriginal father was killed in World War II.
That's right.
And what happened with the Australian government?
The Kokoda trial. And, yeah, he was removed from his mother and he was never able to find her. He was never able to reconnect with the family. And I'm sure Madika can,
yes,
tell you more about that.
Yep.
Because it really is sorry business. And I have to say that the only time that I saw Uncle Ray lose his composure and become emotional in the face of all the traumatic cases that he was dealing with was when he would bring up his stolen generation background and the loss of his mother. And it was very moving to see and so understandable. But I think what was extraordinary about Uncle Ray was that he managed to use that deep sorrow, that deep trauma, and turn it into the pursuit of social justice for everyone else that had been wronged.
Exactly. It's approximately 4:20, and you're listening to an interview with Joseph Bugliese. It's a tribute to Ray Jackson, Wiradjuri warrior, who died actually, his anniversary is in 2 days' time. But yeah, look, Joseph, I agree. I will speak to Madika a lot more about this because it is sorry business. But I did want to say to listeners that the Australian government didn't give Ray's mother a war widow's pension and removed her four children instead.
Absolutely. Quite shocking. And it's wonderful to hear that Madika will be on your show because, unfortunately, after I nominated Uncle Ray for the honorary doctorate at Macquarie University, he died a couple of months before it was awarded. And we were privileged to have Madika step up on the podium with all of the family and accept it on Uncle Ray's behalf. So we were honoured to have the family there to accept it. And let me say that Uncle Ray had said to me, which is why I pursued the honorary doctorate, that given the opportunities which were denied him, he would have loved to have pursued studies. And you can imagine, I mean, he was so brilliant at what he was doing legally, without a degree. You can imagine what he would have achieved if he'd been given those opportunities that had been denied him.
Absolutely. I mean, he was a real fighter. Can you tell us a little bit about the passport ceremonies?
Yeah, look, I'm glad you brought that up because I think those passport ceremonies do two things. One, they place front and centre what I was talking about a little while back, and that is Uncle Ray's utmost commitment to securing Indigenous sovereignty in this country. Rights to land, rights to culture, rights to language, everything that's crucial for the process of self-determination. So he established the Aboriginal passport ceremonies that were held at the settlement in Redfern here in Sydney. And what he would do was, it was a way of affirming, not just asserting, but affirming in a positive way that Indigenous people have not given up the land of their respective Indigenous nations. So he would ask all non-Indigenous people to come and to apply for an Aboriginal passport, which in effect meant that they acknowledged formally that they were settlers in this country and that they needed permission as they travelled across the different Indigenous nations that constitute the continent. And that way, it was a way of marking unbroken, unceded Indigenous sovereignty in this country. Now, importantly, and this is part of that all-encompassing humanity of Uncle Ray that we've been talking about, he also gave Indigenous passports to refugees and asylum seekers who were imprisoned in our immigration detention centres. So there was a sense that he was also instantiating Indigenous sovereignty by saying to the Australian government, you don't get to decide who comes into this country. Rather, Indigenous people do, and we will offer welcome and hospitality to the very people that you have refused, asylum seekers, and who you have incarcerated. And he would sneak these passports in his trousers because if they were caught by the guards, they'd be confiscated. And he would offer warmth and welcome to the asylum seekers imprisoned in those dreadful immigration detention centres.
He was not afraid, was he? And, you know, we'll go so far as to say that he was an internationalist, wasn't he?
That's what was so fantastic too. Thank you for bringing that up, Marissa. Okay. Uncle Ray was an internationalist in his vision because he never just viewed the situation as a national context. He always saw what was happening in Australia as intrinsically connected to other settler states, settler colonial states, New Zealand, Canada, USA. And he was in close dialogue with key Indigenous figures in the US and in Canada, for example, following and tracking what was happening there in terms of Indigenous deaths in custody, racial abuse, racial violence. And let me say that he was the inspiration, precisely because of this internationalist vision, for the establishment which we were in dialogue with him, with Savendrini Pereira, in the founding of the Deathscapes Project, which basically proceeded to track all of the transnational relations of settler power that were effectively killing Indigenous people, incarcerating them at extraordinary rates, and also killing refugees and asylum seekers. So thank you for that. That was the international vision that Uncle Ray left as a legacy for us.
I think that Ray would have really have been very angry about what's happening with Palestine.
Well, thank you again for bringing that up, because he was absolutely committed to justice for Palestine. And I'm talking about well before this genocide, well before the 2014 genocide. And if you received his weekly newsletter, he would name what was happening in occupied Palestine, in occupied Gaza, in occupied West Bank, occupied East Jerusalem as genocide. And he would call for justice. He would call for the ceasing of the warring against the Indigenous Palestinians, for the restitution of their lands, and for justice for them. And to give you a sense of how committed he was to this, he had a representative from the Palestinian Australian community come at the last Australian Indigenous Aboriginal passport ceremony at the settlement, and he gifted them a number of Aboriginal passports because they were going back to the refugee camps in Lebanon where so many displaced Palestinians were living, and he asked them to give them those passports as a sign of solidarity and love from Indigenous people in this country who well understood what settler genocide meant.
Black, white or brindle, he said. And I think that for me, what really shone about Ray was his message of solidarity based on a shared struggle against divide and conquer profit system. And he wanted us all to unite.
Absolutely. I couldn't sum it up more. I couldn't sum up his vision in better words, Marissa. You've absolutely nailed it.
I don't know, Joseph. It just makes me really... You know, he always, like, I know what he would say. He would say, you don't mourn, organise. And that's what he would want. I mean, he always used to say to me, just call me comrade. I don't need to be called uncle. He said to
him. Look, I think Madika might tell you this story in relation to that, the way in which he saw everyone as an equal. At some point, he picked up a stray cat. And I think when they, you know, when he picked it up, someone said, oh, look, the cat's name's King. And he said, there'll be no kings in my apartment. We're all comrades. And he called the cat comrade.
It's true.
It's just... A great sense of humour too.
I love it. I love it. I mean, words can't describe it. And it actually makes me feel better. I mean, leading up to the show, I always feel really off. And I spent the whole morning cooking, and then I thought, you know what? I've got to do this show.
Well, look, it's so important that you're doing this show because you are keeping Uncle Ray's spirit and legacy alive. And as you just said, too, the only way that we can continue to keep Uncle Ray's legacy alive is to continue to organise, to be activists for social justice, and not to sort of, you know, roll over and just say this is all too hard. I mean, he was the last person to lapse into nihilism. He was always someone who was on the front foot, looking toward the future, looking toward achieving social justice change. And I think that's his real legacy once he's gone. You know, we're beholden to continue our work from whatever location we occupy to achieve social justice, to speak out against state violence, racism, and all of the violence that ensues from the settler state in which we live.
Exactly. Joseph, thank you so much for coming onto the program. Are there any concluding comments that you need to make before I prepare for Madika?
Not really. I'm just so grateful, heartfelt gratitude for you continuing to commemorate the passing of this great man. But as you also said, and as I said a moment ago, I think the best way to honour the great Uncle Ray Jackson is to continue social justice activism.
We have to, and in fact, one of the things in conclusion as well that I'd like to say is that, and I'm sure you know this already, Joseph, how I think the day before he passed, he was still sending emails to ISJA, Sydney, and he went and checked on the tent embassy as well.
He did. That was the last thing he did. I think Madika will confirm that. Yeah. And then he went back to his apartment, lay down and passed away. So he was doing all of the footwork of the social justice activist on the very day that he passed.
Well, I really miss him. I really miss him, Joseph.
Yeah, enormously. He's left a huge hole in our hearts.
Thank you so much. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, if I can say, just
tell me.
Convey my love to Madika and Carolyn and the rest of the family, because I can imagine that these are really difficult days. Even as we celebrate his legacy, we also commemorate the loss in our hearts for Uncle Ray.
Indeed, and in fact, Carolyn was meant to come onto the show, but she's having enormous personal commitments that are very heavy at the moment.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
So I want to, I'll send her the link for the podcast once it comes through, but let's give her a really big cheerio, Joseph.
A big hug and much love and strength toward Carolyn from all of us.
Yeah, it's just, there's just too much going on, too much, so many deaths in custody, so much happening, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's pretty overwhelming at the moment. It's coming on a global scale.
Oh, yeah. And we won't mention the war for today. It'll be for another day.
Yeah.
Joseph, thank you so much.
You're welcome. All the best, Marissa. Lovely speaking with you.
You too. You too. Stay in touch.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was our first tribute to Ray Jackson. And we are speaking about his legacy and work. And I'll now go into a much-needed announcement, and hopefully we'll be speaking with Madika soon.
You're listening to 3CR, an apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the apartheid-free zone movement.
Make you Friday, May 1st, is May Day, International Workers' Day. Join 3CR all day in our 50th year of coverage in solidarity with the continued struggle for labour rights and fair working conditions for all our communities around the world.
We got May Day specials from regular Friday shows and special presentations from 3CR's programmers from across the grid. For more info, head to www.3cr.org.au/May Day 2026.
Friday, May the 1st.
Tune in all day right here on 3CR. Whatever happened to the 8-hour day?
Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Can't be the family now. You're listening to the Doin' Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, and this is a special tribute show to Ray Jackson, who was a Wiradjuri warrior who passed away around 2015, as I said in my intro. And we're going to be up next with Madika, who is the granddaughter of Ray, and I'm really looking forward to speaking with her, and I'm delighted to welcome her to the show. Hi, Madika.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Sorry about the mix-up there with the time.
No worries.
I did test texting.
Okay, I just was driving back from the South Coast.
No, you're okay. Madika, all good. Now, I'm wondering if you could just start off by talking about what land you're from.
So right now I'm calling in from Gadigal country in Sydney, but I am a Wiradjuri, Gumbangi and Yuin woman. But I was born in Western Sydney. Yeah.
Wiradjuri, yeah, beautiful. Okay, Madika, so we were talking off air about Ray, and usually I have Carolyn on, but she wanted you to come onto the show this time, and I'm really happy to have you. And in fact, I'm sure that as a little girl, you would have listened to the shows that Ray and I did for Doin' Time.
Yeah, that's right. So I actually grew up living with my grandfather in Redfern until I was about 8 years old. So I went around with him a lot to meetings and, I would, listen to him when he was doing shows and travel with him. Like, he pretty much took me everywhere. Like, there was no babysitters or anything like that.
Wow. So tell us about your grandfather and what you think and feel.
Yeah, he was like my mum and my dad to me. I was kind of taken in by him. You know, my parents were struggling with addiction, and so he took me on when I was about 4 years old full time. So it was kind of my whole world, and at the time I didn't really understand his work or like the impact of it, but as I've grown older, like, you know, having shows, tribute shows like this, and just always people trying to continue his legacy, including myself now. Like, I am a archivist and I work a lot with First Nations material and like kind of getting stuff out of the archives and repatriating it back to the community, and that's largely based on the work that he was doing. And like, what a prolific kind of, I suppose at the time I thought it was hoarding, but actually like collecting information and material like about our people as well. So yeah, he's a man with like a huge legacy, and yeah, I know that he hasn't been forgotten, and not just by our family, but by like the community. And, you know, we were from Sydney, but having this tribute show in Melbourne, like, I feel like it just shows the impact of him as a person and the work that he did as well.
Yeah, actually, I was talking to Joseph Bugliese, who was our first tribute. You would have met him. He would be a friend of yours, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah, when I was younger, for sure.
When you were younger, yeah. And he spoke so highly of you, Madika, and
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and in fact, we were talking about Sorry Business and about how, you know, Ray was stolen generation and he didn't know.
Yeah.
Until he was old, like a young, like until he was older.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely something that he found out later, but kind of in spite of that, he always instilled a real sense of pride in our identity and like his Wiradjuri culture. And I think it was a way for him, through the work that he did, was a way for him to kind of like connect to that missing link as well. So, although he only found out later in life, like I've never had to question my identity or anything like that because it was always something he was really proud of.
Oh, yeah, of course. And the archival material, I mean, speaking of archives, his flat was full of stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if you ever visited the flat. So
I haven't,
though. That was the small like housing apartment that we had on Pitt Street in Waterloo, so like a really large Aboriginal community there and like a poor community with lots of union history and like immigrant history as well. But yeah, it was a tiny two-bedroom flat and that's where I lived with him and he lived there up until he died as well. And it was just like feeling the floor, just like DVDs, like prior to that, like VCRs, records, like paper, posters, and recently I've acquired a lot of his old posters and works and things like that. So it's also something that I'm working on at the moment to get a exhibition in Sydney up and running to kind of show all the things that he collected from like the 70s through to his passing in like the mid 2010s.
That would be very powerful, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Would you say that the work that you're doing with archival material and First Nations had to do with your early beginnings with your granddad?
Yeah, definitely. I actually did a talk for this. It was called a Discourse Day, part of Soft Centre, a festival that happens in Sydney every year. And in it, I talked about the kind of work that me and my partner do under Penrith Myers Archive.
Yeah.
And I cited my grandfather and, like, living with him and how much stuff he held on to and kept that was sometimes misunderstood, like seeing as clutter and things like that, but how much it has impacted me and like the power of archives and like looking or holding on to that history, you know. So yeah, I would definitely say it was a massive influence. And like I said, now that I've received some of his archive, I'm trying to do everything I can to make sure that still gets seen by like new generations as well.
Can you imagine that exhibition, how informative that would be?
Yeah, definitely. I think what's really great about it is it's so broad. Like obviously First Nations issues were his main priority and death in custody, but he also, you know, cared a lot about world politics and he was a union man to begin with. So there's all of those kinds of things as well that are reflective of the things that he really was passionate and cared about and were a part of his history as well.
Yeah, his unionism started on the war.